Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We had planned on today's program to have a discussion with Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill, but as you may know, her mother has passed away, and she has understandably stepped back from her campaign and canceled her time with us. As we extend our condolences, we move on to our other scheduled segment. In today's world, we are overwhelmed by media messages, from the evening news to advertising to any number of online sources. There are ways to more closely evaluate media messages. It's called media literacy, honing critical thinking skills. That's the mission of Gateway Media Literacy Partners of St. Louis, sponsor of the 6th annual Media Literacy Week. With us to talk about the week and the mission are two participants in various Literacy Week events, Alton Grizzle of UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, which has proclaimed media literacy as a fundamental human right. Frank Gallagher, Executive Director for Cable in the Classroom, which advocates for the effective use of broadband in teaching and learning. Also with us, Jessica Brown, founder of Gateway Media Literacy Partners. I thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
Thank you.
Anton, let me begin with you. I'm intrigued by this notion of using media literacy as a basic and fundamental human right. Yeah. Expound on that for me, would you?
Thank you so much, Don. Let me just start by saying that for the listeners who are out there, to remind them about who UNESCO is and what we do. UNESCO was founded in 1945 after the Second World War on the famous maxim that if wars begin in the minds of men, it is in the minds of men that the bastion of peace should be constructed. And over 60 years on into present time, our work continues. The relevance of our work continues. And that is to promote peace, equality, and sustainable development. And we do this through our five areas of competences, which is education, the sciences, natural and social sciences, culture and communication and information. We have as our priority two overarching priorities, gender equality and Priority Africa. And our work continues to address issues that begin in the minds of men, issues of gender equality, issues of climate change, issues of the use of science and technology. Issues concerning freedom of expression and freedom of the press. These are issues that continue, that start in the minds of men, and we continue to do that work. Media and information literacy is a part of our global outreach and action. From the standpoint that UNESCO, we do a lot of work to promote media development across the globe, to advocate for freedom of expression. But we also realize that we need to do some work with the audiences, with the citizens. We do work with the demand side of media and technology. So we also need to empower those who are receiving, the consumers, the citizens. And media and information literacy is essentially about empowering individuals to use traditional media, to use new technology for self-actualization, for lifelong learning, to inform themselves of a world that is much larger than their immediate world, their country or their region. And for us, media and information literacy is an extension of existing human rights. And so education for all is important for UNESCO. And we feel that media and information literacy is a part of education. In the way that education is a human right, in the way that freedom of expression and access to information is a human right, media and information literacy is wrapped up in all of that. And for us, contextually, it's an extension, and it becomes also something that is important for individuals.
Well, how do you reach these people? There are many governments out there that probably would not like to hear what you're saying right here, and they would not encourage media literacy among their populations.
You're totally right. the advantage that UNESCO has is that, you know, we are an organization, an intergovernmental organization. So our mandate is given to us by our member states, our 195 member states. Everything we do must be approved by what we call the executive board, which is the highest decision-making body of UNESCO, all our member states. And so even for the countries where others on the outside might say there's not a free press, there's not freedom of expression, we also have a mandate to speak to these countries. UNESCO, for example, is the only UN agency mandated to promote freedom of expression. And so we'll go to our member states, whoever they are, and we say, this is what you have mandated us to do. And we will say respectfully, without interfering with sovereignty, that, you know, I mean, according to our work, if a journalist is killed, you know, we'd like to get some sort of report. What is happening? Why a journalist is being killed? And we find that our member states have approved media and information literacy as a core part of our work, and they are promoting it, and they want us to work with them. There is the challenge, of course, with how do we, you know, bring that balance about in terms of empowerment and protectionism. And we do have a situation where we're working with member states. You know, it's when you're talking about children, when you're talking about the risks and challenges in the virtual world, you know, you can understand why governments and parents and families will say, hey, I need to protect. But UNESCO is there to say to them that, listen, you can protect for a time, but eventually you're not going to be able to shield citizens and individuals from the rest of, you know, all the information that is out there. You're not be able to shield them forever. You can put up all the screening and internet blocking, but eventually they might leave that country, and they're getting around to it. So what needs to happen is empowerment. We need to give these individuals skills so that they can be informed consumers of information, so they can be critical users of information and media, so that they can understand how they can engage with media. They can understand the importance of media and information and technology to development. They can understand basically, even for a young boy in college looking for a girl, that you have an information problem right at the beginning. Who is this girl? Where is she from? You know, does she possess some of the qualities that you're looking for? These are some skills that you need. It's not just about social and political life, but it's about your daily living.
Well, you've just put it in a perspective that I think a lot more people don't understand, perhaps. Frank Gallagher, what's your take on this?
Well, Alton did a really fine job of presenting an international perspective and in looking at media and information literacy as a fundamental human right. Mm. What I'd like to suggest is that it's also an incredibly necessary skill for the 21st century. If you look at how we communicate with each other, how we take in information, we spend an inordinate amount of time, money, and effort teaching kids how to read and write, how to decode the lines on paper, how to understand an author's intent, whether it's to entertain or educate or persuade us. The techniques authors use to convey an extra sense of meaning, whether it's alliteration or onomatopoeia, symbolism, metaphor. Yet when we look at television, when we listen to radio, look at movies, or go on the internet, those are all forms of media with the same sort of techniques that the creators can use to convey meaning in different ways. Yet we don't teach that nearly as much as we should. And in some cases, we can become vulnerable to misinformation. We don't recognize commercial intent when it's there. We may find ourselves narrowing our viewpoint to tunnel vision, where we only access information that supports what we believe and agrees with us, and not be exposed to perspectives other than that. So for many of those reasons, media and information literacy is more important now than ever, as more and more and more of the information that we both take in, and now with the tools that we have available, the information that we create, we need to be able to analyze how it was put together. We need to know the techniques that are used to convey meaning beyond simple words.
Well, how do you teach that?
there are a lot of ways that you can begin to cover this. For one thing, you can begin looking at something simple like the use of camera angles in a video, how a soundtrack, the music, supports a feeling. If a narrator is involved, is the narrator's voice deep and commanding and authoritative? And what kind of a feel does that give a piece, particularly with the ability of anyone with a smartphone now to create a high-definition movie? You can have kids start to realize that you're making decisions every step of the way that have an impact on how somebody's going to see that. By choosing to focus and put on screen something, you're also deciding what you're not putting on the screen. That you're pacing, or that if you're shooting at a camera angle down at someone, it makes them seem more powerless and diminishes them. If you're shooting a camera angle up, it makes them seem more powerful. Just by producing media, you learn a lot about some of the techniques, how they play out, and the kind of sort of hidden messages they can convey that can either support your message or, in some cases, completely undermine your message.
Sounds, Jessica, very manipulative.
I wanted to underscore the fact that Frank mentioned production, and we're also talking about consumer. So we have the consumer part of this equation of media literacy as well as the production. Before, we thought so much of just this notion of being good consumers of media. So I think it's really important because everybody's out there producing media. It's an extraordinary. I did want to address something that you talked about earlier, perhaps a reticence on some countries' parts, for instance, with regard to media information literacy and the whole idea of becoming media literate, media information literate. I'm going to go back to that in a minute because I think that's an important discussion. Is it media literacy or is it media information literacy? But in St. Louis, Gateway Media Literacy Partners has been, it is not the first foray into international media literacy. Countries are very hungry to come here and hear what we're doing in this community with regard to media literacy. They want to take this model back. They want to learn about this democracy skill. We've been meeting with U.S. Department delegations since 07 through the World Council, the Council on World Affairs here in St. Louis. And the most recent delegation was from China. And we've established relationships with these people who want to learn about media literacy. It's really a wonderful thing.
Well, it seems to me I have to take a break, and I'll just leave it at this, and we can pick it up when we come back, that this can be a double-edged sword. As we teach consumers how to understand what's going on better, the producers are also learning how to be more effective in manipulating. I'll use that word again, manipulating audiences. And I have an example I saw last night in conjunction with the hurricane on the East Coast. But we have to take that break. We'll do that now. We're talking about media literacy. My guests in studio are Jessica Brown, who is the founder of the Gateway Media Literacy Partners. Also with me is Alton Grizzle of UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, and Frank Gallagher, also with us, Executive Director for Cable in the Classroom. Back to continue our conversation on media literacy in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. Our conversation is on media literacy. I'm Don Marsh. My guests in studio, Alton Grizzle of UNESCO, Frank Gallagher, Executive Director for Cable in the Classroom, and Jessica Brown, who is the founder of the Gateway Media Literacy Partners here in St. Louis. I want to get back to this idea of manipulation. And watching television last night, they were showing still photographs of New York City. And one of the photographs showed the city virtually dark from lower Manhattan shooting northward. And one of the commentators said, but we're not sure about this because we think these photographs are being photoshopped. And they're trying to make it, whoever they were, are trying to make it look worse than it actually is. And I said to myself, my God, we're not safe from being exposed to this kind of deception anywhere or under any circumstances. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, this is why media and information literacy is so important. I think let's look at what are some of the learning outcomes of media and information literacy to answer the point that you just made. We're looking at, for media and information literacy, we start with, you know, being able to assess your information needs, being able to access information, to evaluate information, to create information, to use technologies to process information. On the media side, you need to understand the functions of media in democratic societies and for good governance. You need to have skills, competencies, knowledge, skills, and attitudes to understand the environment in which media can carry their function, to critically evaluate their content, and to engage with media for democracy, for good governance, and to also use technology for creation, user-generated content. One of the, in UNESCO, one of the purpose of media and information literacy is to do exactly what you spoke about, is to promote quality media. You know, a part of our mandate in promoting freedom of expression is also to promote quality media. We understand that media have established functions that they must carry out. And what we want to do is to empower the citizens to identify some of what you just described, that in media as an institution, as the fourth estate, that they have a responsibility as watchdog for the society, and that the citizens themselves can demand quality media, but they cannot demand quality media if they don't have the skills themselves to assess what is coming to them. And so this is what media and information literacy is about. It's about giving citizens the skills to say, listen, you have put erroneous information on the screen. You have put information that is not correct. You're putting content that is not quality content. And the citizens, they have the power to say to the media organization, because of what you're doing, you're going to lose our viewership. You're going to lose our listenership. But if we don't make citizens understand that, if we don't let them understand the power that they have, what is happening is that the media organizations, if the situation where they feel that they can get away with poor editorial responsibility, with showing erroneous content and poor quality content, but the viewers are still watching it, still consuming it, and they still have this base that they can say to advertisers, listen, 90% of St. Louis is watching what we're doing, then they will continue to show what we're calling sensationalism. But if we empower the citizens to say, we want quality, what is the quality that we want? What sort of content do we want? If we are consuming what is being given to us, then we are part of the problem. And we're saying to citizens, you should stop being a, you can't avoid being a part of the problem, and you can contribute to quality media.
But Frank Gallagher, let me just give an example. Suppose we're talking about North Korea, which is not a free and open society, and where the government, with an iron fist, controls all media, and through repetition continues to tell people what they want to tell people. There really isn't much of an opportunity for media literacy to play any kind of a role at all, is there?
It certainly makes it much more difficult. And as Alton was speaking, I was thinking back to the Cold War days in the Soviet Union and how they used to remove people from photographs. And you could learn a great deal about what was going on in the higher leadership levels by comparing historic photographs of a May Day parade from year to year and seeing who's been airbrushed out or who's been pasted in.
It's easier today, digital world.
Even easier today, but in those days, it was much easier for a government to completely control the information coming in and going out of a country. Somewhere around the Tiananmen Square moment back in the 1990s, when cell phones started to become available and fax machines back then, that governments lost control of being able to manage the information coming in and out of a country. Even in North Korea, there are villages and cities near the border that can pick up South Korean or Chinese television. You can get satellite signals, radio, so that governments, even when they control the state means of media distribution, don't control everything. And people are learning and seeing more about the outside world. And that does raise a lot of questions. I mean, certainly in many of the Arab countries, the government had been the one who controlled the state media, but because of things like Al Jazeera and the internet, movements like the Arab Spring were able to flourish. So I think it's a whole different world now in terms of control of information, but it makes it even more important for citizens to have the skills to be discerning and thoughtful about media. You mentioned manipulation earlier, and yes, there is some manipulation, but there's also an opportunity to use media more effectively to present yourself and whatever point you want to get across if you know these techniques that can reinforce the message that you're trying to get at, whether it's your own Facebook, your own digital reputation, a presentation you're giving at a business meeting, to creating a video that's supposed to train people in how to do X, Y, or Z.
Jessica?
To the point about these learning skills, I was in Cuba a little while back, and I actually saw avenues where I think, for instance, in the arts and with the hip-hop community, which is very strong there, that there were opportunities to at least begin the conversation about how can you create more participation and more community via the media. And it is, in certain pockets, very rich.
Well, and when we're talking about the media, I think, you know, we have to maybe here, for the purposes of this discussion, put a little more emphasis on the Internet, particularly as mm-hmm. we talk about things that are going on internationally. Because the St. Louis Post-Dispatch is not delivered in Accra, nor, in Seoul and many other places of the world, obviously. So a lot of the information is distributed through the Internet. And that is impossible, really, to judge the veracity of what we're getting. There's just no way to be sure that the message that is being transmitted is true or accurate. Thoughts on that, Frank?
Yeah, Don, that's one of the great conundrums now. In days past, if you wanted to reach an audience, you had to go through layers within a media company where somebody would look at what you had created as an editor and edit it. There'd be lawyers to check it over to make sure you were not libeling some of their fact checkers to make sure it's accurate. And there were producers that knew their business that could shape and craft the product or message to be exactly what it was. And it was a curated universe of information in the same way that libraries mm-hmm. curate collections. But now that's all gone with something as simple as a smartphone connected to a 4G network or with a broadband connection at home. Anybody can be a multinational media company capable of reaching all across the world. So how do you determine the veracity or the timeliness of information? That's one problem that we're seeing in graduates. We have supported a research project from Project Information Literacy that's looked at the research skills of incoming college students and found that they're deficient, that they don't understand how a search engine works and how it ranks the mm-hmm. sites that it returns, that they're liable to grab the first thing that comes up and thinks because it's on top, it's the best source. So that we have to begin to understand this new environment or media ecology that we're in. But we also have to sort of be a little skeptical enough so that we don't just take one source. Wikipedia can be a fabulous way of getting quick information, but that shouldn't be your only source. You have to verify it with something else.
Yeah. How is UNESCO dealing with this whole internet part of the equation?
Well, we take it from a number of angles. Well, first of all, we continue to promote the importance of editorial responsibility in terms of media. As the fourth estate, and we think that editorial responsibility is still very, very important. And Frank is totally correct that with the new technology, what it has done is turn media production and content production upside down, where the consumers and the users are becoming producers themselves, and that editorial responsibility, where you can hold someone accountable, hold an organization accountable for the accuracy of that information is taken away. And this is why media and information literacy is so critical, because we're saying now you're being flooded with information, all right? most of the information, we're living in a virtual world. You know, our students, they're in a physical world, the classrooms, the physical spaces as we know it, but they're also in a virtual world. In a presentation, we spoke about a reconfigured map of the world where there's no North America, but North America becomes Facebook, and there's a Gulf of YouTube, and there's radio land and TV land. And this is where young people and citizens are living. And in that virtual world, the same way they have rules and regulations in their physical world. You live in a community, you know, I can't park there, I must go there. There's some similar rules in this virtual world, and you need to understand what these rules are. There's some do's and don'ts. There are things that are called privacy laws. There are things that are called, you know, privacy policies and regulations for Facebook. And so as a citizen, if I'm going to be using Facebook, I need to understand what their privacy policies are, because I'm going to be affected by that. But we're talking about developing competences, knowledge, skills, and attitude. And that attitude aspect is so important. It's that attitude of inquiry. It's that attitude that, you know, my environment has changed and I'm enjoying it so much, but I'm not realizing that in my enjoyment and pleasure that there's so much risk. I'm not realizing that in my enjoyment and pleasure that I'm in fact not using this environment to its greatest potential. I'm not using the internet to its greatest potential. So it's fine to go on the internet and spend hours playing games. Nothing is wrong with that. All right.
Oh yes, there is.
Well, nothing is wrong with that. The issue is balance. The issue is balance. All right. And so, you know, games go all the way back to the primitive ages. You know, I mean, people have always been playing games. And so, if you come to electronic games, it's fine. The issue is that the balance. If you spend more time playing games than you spend doing your research for your assignment, using that powerful tool for your research for your assignment, then that's where the issue comes in. And this is where media information literacy is saying, you can do more with the tool. You can do more with technology. You can do more with traditional media. You can do more with the radio and the television and the newspaper. You can do more with the content. It's not all bad. UNESCO is saying, we're trying to empower citizens to say, it's not in either extremes. It's not saying, once it's in the media, it's all right and it's good. And once it's not, it's bad. Or if it's on the internet and popular sites are saying it, or 100 of my friends are tweeting this thing, then it's true. We're saying, do some checks, as Frank said. Look at different sources. And these are the skills. These are the new multi-literacies that media and information literacy brings to our school, to our formal and non-formal education. And the media can play a role. The media as an institution can play a role in promoting media and information literacy, because their existence will depend on it, in fact.
I'd like to pick up on something that Alton said there, that the media itself has an interest in this. I run an education foundation that was established by the cable industry, and back in 1989, they realized that education was necessary. Cable in the Classroom started by providing free cable connections and educational video programming to K-12 schools all across the U.S. as the industry built out. And our role was to go in and help teachers learn how to use that. What we found out was that schools of teacher education were not teaching how to use video effectively to teach. We found that once educators started to look at the power of media to get messages across, the power of media to help kids engage in critical thinking about a television program in the same way they would about an essay or a novel, had great educational value, that an educated consumer in this case was a good thing to have. That has followed into the internet realm as the industry has shifted from being just video to now being internet providers of both the physical connection, but also the content, that it's more important than ever to have educated consumers. I've heard an analogy several times that the internet seems to bring up a lot of fear because it's unknown. It's something that's rapidly changing, and it's like the Wild West. Now, we have a tendency to think of the Wild West as a bunch of gunfights and lawlessness, but reality was the Wild West was not really wild. It was a fairly peaceful place. It was that people were out ahead of the institutions, both of government and education, and they were figuring out things as they went. They were forming their own communities, trying to establish new norms and rules of behavior, and they were there ahead of the institutions, and we're kind of in that same situation now.
I was just going to make that point, Jessica, and I'll put this to you, that we really, the whole situation is being clouded by the fact that the media world today is trying to figure itself out. Newspapers don't know where they're going or whether they're even going to be here 5 years from now. The internet is kind of sorting itself out. You know, you can look at any number of media sources, and they're not really clear on what the next step is going to be.
Well, absolutely that, the technology, but media literacy education promotes a process. Regardless of the media, regardless of the sources, regardless of the distribution channels, the technology, the processes remain the same. To be able to have that toolkit when you need it, to be discerning and to be a good citizen. And to another point that was made earlier, I think it's interesting about this notion of citizenship and fair use, which we have in our country, the ability to be free to use information, knowing the guidelines, knowing the rules, allows ultimately, I submit to you, that you can have more enjoyment with the media once you know the rules.
Well, what rules? Okay. Where are the rules?
Okay. Well, when we're talking about fair use, I bet, you know,
ethical
Frank
use.
Certainly can, pardon?
So ethical use of information is one thing that citizens should know. In the same way, citizens demand certain things from media as an institution. They demand quality. You spoke about manipulation earlier. Citizens also have responsibility in this new technological world where the editors have been removed and they're being replaced by algorithms. And so citizens have a role to play in that. If you're going to be putting erroneous information out there, if you're going to be tweeting hate speech to someone, all right, you know, who are you benefiting and why are you doing this? And are you being a good global citizen by doing this? You know, are you promoting peace? Are you promoting respect for cultures? So someone says something that you do not believe, and you start, you know, mobilizing all your friends, and you're attacking this person on the internet. You're bullying this person. These are skills that citizens need to understand, that they too have a responsibility. And in the context of human rights and talking about the rights holders and the duty bearers, citizens, you know, are both rights holders. They have rights to access to information, right to quality media and free and independent media. They have rights to an open internet, but they also have responsibilities to ensure too that as access to information, information flow opens up, that they contribute to quality too, and they do not put information out there that is erroneous.
Well, I want to pick up on that point, but I have to take another break, and we'll do that now. You've just heard from Alton Grizzle of UNESCO. He is with us in studio for our discussion about media literacy. He's here because of a special week, Media Literacy Week, which is being observed here in St. Louis. We'll also be talking about that. He's with us in studio, as is Frank Gallagher, Executive Director for Cable in the Classroom, and Jessica Brown, also with us, founder of the Gateway Media Literacy Partnership. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation on media literacy. Frank Gallagher, we were just talking about the role of the consumer, and we've been talking about that throughout this program. On this program, at other times, we have talked about the fact that many people, if not most people, tend to go for their information which is someplace in their comfort zone. We see it most particularly, I think, in cable television, where liberals will go to MSNBC and the more conservative will go to Fox. They want to be where they're comfortable, and therefore they are not exposed to other points of view. How do we, through some sort of media literacy concept or construct, get around that?
Well, you did point to a very interesting problem now for all that cable provides in meeting the needs of various niche audiences and interests. There's also the ability to self-segregate yourself into a very narrow, self-reinforcing view, which can be very seductive because it doesn't require you to challenge your beliefs. one of the things that we like to do in public education is provide kids, students, with a wide variety of viewpoints on any given topic to actually seek out and investigate topics to determine their own relationship with your values, the veracity of any information they may have. But it's difficult to for people to continue to challenge their own beliefs. One of the things that a friend of mine was telling me is that if, and particularly in relation to this current election season, is if you have to know what the other side is proposing, what other people believe, in order to help your own candidates and beliefs, you have to know who the adversary is. We see the problems around this when we look at what's going on around the world and how ill-prepared Americans are to understand the beliefs of Muslim countries and people from Islam who get upset about depictions of the Prophet Muhammad. We don't understand that because we don't understand Islam, because we're not going out and seeking other opinions and beliefs. And in the same way, the people overseas who are protesting in front of an American embassy because somebody put a video trailer on YouTube don't understand the United States and our media universe. It will be a continuing problem that requires more education.
What you're saying is it ain't easy.
Yes.
It's work.
It's not easy. It's as I mentioned earlier, it's about changing an attitude. It's about changing a culture. You know what I mean? And it takes 100 years to change a culture. If you have been doing this thing for the same way for over a long period of time, it's not easy to change it. But you know, we believe that what media and information literacy, this attitude of inquiry, this attitude of multiple sources, this attitude of promoting diversity. This attitude of understanding that information and knowledge are embedded in cultures and different cultural practices and beliefs, and developing an open mind that what are the underlying fundamentals? What's driving this sort of information? What's driving this research finding? Is there something external to what I'm thinking about? It's not easy. It takes time, and this is why we are promoting media and information literacy, and the approach to doing that is to identify some of the experiences that young people are having on the internet, to share some of the experiences, and when you talk with young people and you listen to some of the experiences that they're having. Then you can talk to them based on their experiences. Then you get them to start thinking differently. This is what you're doing, and this has been the outcome of what you have done on the internet. These are some of the challenges you have had. These are some of the experiences you have had. Why have you had these experiences in this virtual world? And you have had it because you have done this, you have not done this, you have not done this. You have had it because you don't understand a basic thing as the permanence of information, the permanence of data in the virtual world. So when you put something up, you think that tomorrow I can go and take it down and it's gone. Mm-hmm. But no, it's replicated 500 times on 500 different servers, and it's there. And it becomes a permanent part of you. And you said, okay, this was one aspect of my life. I want to remove it. But you can't remove it anymore. So if people understand that, these have been your practices, and these are the consequences. These are some of the consequences of your practice, and this is what media and information literacy is all about. It's about changing attitudes. It's about changing culture. It's not just a body of knowledge. It's not just teaching media and information literacy as a subject, as you teach maths, but it's about a way of thinking. It's a way of learning and teaching. It's a way of interacting with your family members. It's a way of interacting with your spouse. It's a way of interacting with citizens all around the world. And we see it happening in social network. We see it happening, and some of it is happening without without any sort of intentional, purposeful means. You know what I mean? So you go with a lesson plan. I want you to teach you this. But, you know, some of what we're trying to achieve is happening in social networking. And people are interacting. People are basing their lives, you know, and their emotions on the social network. And it's changing how they think.
But, you know, you talk, and Jessica, for you here, you talk about reaching young people and teaching young people. But frequently young people don't want to hear from older people. And frequently older people don't understand the media that the young people are working with anyway. So how do you overcome that? Have you found this to be kind of a challenge with your organization?
No, because, well, yes, of course. But we take pains to try to educate the new education student, the student who will be tomorrow's teacher. And that's very important in this discussion, because a young model modeling these principles, these core principles of media literacy education, is really the best model. So to speak to that, I totally agree with you. I think that's very important. So teaching the teachers of tomorrow is a key here. I wanted to bring one other point. Sure. About this notion of audience and understanding our audiences. We recently created an international media literacy committee. We want to benefit our region by allowing those in the region to understand our audiences better. That's a key part of media literacy, to understand audience. We believe if you understand audience, you can reach audience, you can connect with audience. And I think that makes us good local citizens and good global citizens.
But, you know, I wonder if that's not lopsided. Yeah. What about the other side of that equation? Teaching to understand audiences. I thought this whole thing was about having the audience understand.
It is one part. No, it is one part. If we understand how our audience, we can communicate. That's, you know, getting back to the create side, creating messages to participate in community, in the larger community.
If you take a real easy example, if you're going to give a speech before an organization, in order to deliver your message effectively, you have to understand who the audience is, what their interests are, how they may perceive the words and phrases that you're using. And if you expand that to a wider frame of reference, whether it's the internet or a YouTube video or a Facebook page, you have to know a little bit about who is going to be seeing this, how they might perceive what you're doing, and what you need to do to convey the message or impression that you want, and not to leave some kind of misperception.
Boy, we could get into a political discussion here with regard to what's been going on for the last year. So go ahead, Alton.
Yeah, I wanted to pick up on that point of the generational gap, because it's a very important point. Because media and information literacy is not just about young people. You know, it requires a holistic strategy in terms of its implementation. And so, when we talk about media and information literacy, it's also about parents. It's also about media and information literacy for parents. It's also about media and information literacy for teachers. It's also about media and information literacy for policymakers and for government officials. And so UNESCO is promoting a strategy that is holistic, that is broad. For example, we have developed what we call the media and information literacy curriculum for teachers. And the idea is that we should not make the same error that we made with ICTs in the classroom. You know, with the new technologies and the excitement about the new technologies, we just rushed to put all sorts of technologies in the classroom, but then the teachers weren't equipped to deal with it. And I don't know much about what happened here in North America, but, for example, in the developing countries where I'm from, in Jamaica, a lot of these programs failed because the teachers weren't equipped. And so in terms of generational gap, we're saying that teachers, whatever the age is, they need to become media and information literate also. And we're pushing for media and information literacy at all levels of the education curriculum, not just at secondary and primary school, but at tertiary level. And we're talking about programs, informal programs, through media organizations to make sure that parents are also media and information literate, policymakers, government officials become media and information literate. And so that way, that's how the generational gap can be met.
We have a Facebook comment here. Frank, if you hold on just a second, because while we're on this part of the conversation, let me read this to you. It's directed to you, Alton, I believe. Mm-hmm. It says, how does UNESCO assist inner city communities which statistically struggle financially access media literacy? For example, public schools have increased the use of online textbooks. If a household cannot afford a personal computer or internet access and may be limited to public transportation to public libraries, how is that family going to access to informal media literacy in pursuit of a formal education in general and in media literacy?
Excellent question to that listener.
That's from Ray, by the way.
From Ray. Thank you, Ray, for that question. Our work at UNESCO is about reaching the marginalized. It's about reaching those who are, quote-unquote, underprivileged, those who do not have the opportunity. And we are doing extensive work on media and information literacy. Right now, we're focusing on the formal education, but I'll give you some examples of some of the work that we do. To understand the way we operate in UNESCO is that we're not the organization that focuses so much on access to internet, for example. That is the work of the International Telecommunication Union. And so a lot of the resources that we have will not necessarily go into, you know, giving internet access. So we do some of that work. So, for example, some of these rural and remote communities, we have programs that we call community radios or community multimedia centers, where we go to remote and rural communities and inner-city communities. In Jamaica, for example, where I'm from, and I grew up in the inner-city community, I grew up around the guns and the drugs and the violence, and I see where many young men and women in those communities, you know, their world is just the street that they live on. Their world is just the corner. And so we have done interesting programs, for example, like setting up in a community radio station in those communities. We've set up community multimedia centers in those communities. We have done creative projects like putting community radio in a prison library. We have done creative and innovative projects like taking a garbage bin, the garbage bin which is popular in Europe and America, those wheeled garbage bin, which those young men on the corners, you know what I mean, this is what they're familiar with. And we have taken those garbage bin and we've transformed those into multimedia centers. When you open the lid, you're looking at a big Apple screen. You pull out the drawers on the side and you're pulling out speakers and printers. And we take that on the corner and we give people access to information and access to technology. So there's a lot of creative work that we're doing, but we believe that while those non-formal approaches are critical, what is needed is to get media and information literacy in the formal school curriculum, both inner city schools, public schools, and also for Ivy League schools, for rich and wealthy schools. They also need media and information literacy.
Okay, our time is getting away. You wanted to make a point, Frank Gallagher, a moment ago, but it happened to be very quick.
Let me respond to the Facebook post, because within the cable industry, there are a number of pilot projects that are addressing this access issue. I'll use Comcast as an example because they're furthest along.
They have created, can you do it in 30 seconds?
They've created a program that provides deeply discounted broadband service to homes of families with kids in the free and reduced price school lunch program, deeply discounted computers, and free digital literacy, media literacy training to those families.
And Jessica, these gentlemen will be making their expertise available through Media Literacy Week in your organization.
And we're very pleased and
tell
honored.
Us, tell us what's going on in 30 seconds
well,
or so, if you could.
Political discussions. Tonight we have a WashU panel, University College, Ladue Horton Watkin High School, a teacher presentation there, another press club, and Missouri Professional Communicators panel at Webster tomorrow, an academic symposium. Go to the website.
That's what I was
and also
suggesting.
See our columnists who speak to media literacy They represent all the sectors of our community.
We'll put a link to your website on ours. Give us that address so folks can write it
down. www.gmlpstl.org.
All right. All the information about what's going on this week is there. And as I say, we'll put it on our website.
Thank you.
Alton Grizzle, thank you so much
for
being with us. Enjoy your
stay
in St. Louis. Frank Gallagher, nice meeting you.
Pleasure.
Enjoy your time here in St. Louis. And Jessica, it's always a pleasure to see you.
Thank you so much.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll broadcast the first hour of a two-hour town hall meeting examining the four statewide ballot measures on the November 6th ballot. In the first hour, we'll take a look at Proposition A, which would restore local control of the police in the city of St. Louis. Then we'll discuss Proposition E, which would require a vote of the people or the legislature before establishing health insurance exchanges. The second hour, examining Proposition B, which would raise the tobacco tax, and Amendment 3, which would change how some judges are selected in Missouri. This will be heard at 11 on Thursday morning. You can be part of the audience by joining us in the community room of our new building in Grand Center by 10:45 a.m. tomorrow. Or you can listen at 90.7 FM. It's a presentation of Beyond November and Focus St. Louis. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.